your hands, clap 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 your hands, yeah, clap your hands. And I can call him from my heart. I got a telephone in my bosom, and I can call him from my heart. When I need my brother, brother, when I need my father, father, hey, mother, mother, hey, sister, yeah. When I need my brother.
Good morning, good morning, good morning, good morning, and welcome to Resistance Radio on EnlightenRadio.org, your place for the news of the resistance and inspiration of our leaders and forebears in the Eastern Panhandle of West Virginia, but spreading across America and around the globe. My name is Stuart Acuff. I'm your host on Resistance Radio. Happy to be with you this morning. Bad news and good news of resistance all around America. I'm here today with my great friend and leader, John Case, covering the Eastern Panhandle of West Virginia, joined this morning by the magic of radio computers and telephones. Good morning, John.
Pretty good. I apologize for the little bit late magic this morning, okay, on the computers, but power blips in West Virginia are becoming more common, so here we go.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, it's just an example of our crumbling infrastructure.
Right.
You know, we've got to redo the entire electric grid in America to accommodate more green and renewable energy. That's a huge project that we should be investing in that would create a lot of high-paid electrical jobs and also construction jobs in terms of rerunning transmission lines and eliminating line loss of electricity over the lines, bleeding out as it's transmitted. So, you know, the fact that we had a power blip in Harper's Ferry should not surprise anybody.
It was a little bit less costly than the water blip we had a while back, but,
at the Red Caboose, the water blip at the Red Caboose.
Yes,
coming to you from the Red Caboose in Harper's Ferry, West Virginia. So happy to have you with us this morning. So happy to have my friend and leader, John Case, helping with his show and performing the always critical role of engineering for us today. It's so great to have you with us on Enlightened Radio. We're going to talk about a lot today. We're going to talk about, you know, we're going to talk about the resistance, and we're going to talk about sort of what's coming at us. We're going to talk about victories on healthcare, victories on the travel ban, the struggle over tax reform, and we're going to listen a little bit through my voice and John's voice to what the estimable Paul Krugman, scholar, activist, economist, professor at Princeton University, and op-ed columnist for the New York Times. We're going to listen a little bit through the voice of John and myself to what Krugman has to say about the awful tax reform plan. And I'm going to read a little poetry today. I hope you don't mind. I've been writing
every day.
Excuse me. I've been writing every day, and you know, it always looks good to the writer the first day. Sometimes it looks good to the writer the second day. Right, and if it's really good, the writer is happy with it, whether it gets published or not. So.
That's right.
So I'm going to read two or three poems today. Hey, John, I'm going to be asking for you this from you throughout the show. Can you give me a time check? How are we doing?
Okay, we're at we're at 9:26, but we started 15 minutes late, basically. So you're 10 minutes. You're 10 minutes into the program.
10 minutes into the show. That's great.
Yeah.
John, can you cue up and play this great soulful freedom song by Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, or by Neil Young, Find the Cost of Freedom?
Okay, you want to hear it now?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay.
This is wooden music again, so you gotta be cool, otherwise you won't hear
wonderful, beautiful song.
Oh yeah,
I was talking about Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young with my new love last week, and I went back and listened to this song. And actually, it was written and performed not long after the Kent State massacre. And you know, John, it's really crazy. For the first time, I've known this song since Four Way Street came out in what, the early '70s?
Yeah, right.
I think
71,
early to mid 70s.
70 to 71, yeah. Somewhere in there. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And I listened to the song since then, and I it was like I heard it with new ears last week and realized it's about death. Mother Earth will cover you, lay your body down, and and Uncle Neil was talking about the sacrifice some people have to make for the freedom of all of us. And it's a, you know, it's just a beautiful song. I'm going to read a poem that was inspired by this song in just a minute. But I want to, you know, take a moment and once again thank my dear friend John Case, who has been part of the salvation of my life here in West Virginia. And thank him for holding this radio station together all but single-handedly. It's a massive labor of love for one person to do that and keep all of us hosts in line and on time and, you know, try to run it as a professional operation when nobody is professional because nobody's getting paid. So thank you, John Case.
No, you're welcome, my friend.
I'm sure Dr. Zaki McGill and Gail Becker and Bradley Sanders and Jan Hafer and Benny and Mr. Bill and a whole crowd of wonderful folks in the Eastern Panhandle appreciate you as much as I do, John. So let me go ahead and read this poem about the cost of freedom. We learn again in America the sometimes awful cost of freedom. All who desire liberation must pay a personal price. Some will lose the source of income. Many will sacrifice relationships. The personal price of our freedom cannot be paid in some faraway place. In this resistance, we pay a collective price. But the collective cost does not pay the personal price. Dr. King and Caesar paid their personal price with their lives, and they put down the first payment of our cost. So we struggle to find strength in each other and to nourish the souls of one another. So I've been thinking about that a lot.
That's a good one. I like that. That's a nice
Thank
reflection.
You, John.
That's a nice reflection on that song. And, you know, I think that Cesar Chavez, you mentioning that brought back a lot of memories about the particular sacrifice that guy underwent. And, I mean, he didn't get assassinated like Dr. King.
But, he literally starved himself to death over about a 15, 20 year period.
He sure did.
I mean, the repeated fast just wore his body out, and I think he died in his early 60s.
Right.
Yeah. I have a vivid memory of Bobby Kennedy when he had decided to run for president in 1968. Sitting with Caesar when he broke his longest fast, I think it was 56 days, and Bobby Kennedy breaking that fast with him. But there is no better example of the sacrifice of real people for this resistance and for this movement and for justice and freedom than the lifetime cost to Dr. King and to Cesar Chavez and what they have meant to the liberation of all of us. So it's just a nice thing to remember that none of this is free. And, you know, as the right wing has said for years, freedom isn't free. Well, they actually don't know exactly what they're talking about, but freedom isn't free. So there's interesting news today in the resistance. And we are happy to report it here on Resistance Radio at enlightenradio.org, www.enlightenradio.org. Tell your friends and neighbors to tune in. Spread this podcast around. Let people know what's going on here in the Eastern Panhandle of West Virginia and the terrific fight your brothers and sisters are making across West Virginia and across the country to constrain the fascist tendencies and impulses and of Donald John Trump, the pretender to the presidency. And so we want to bring you some of the news this morning. You know, bipartisanship has just broken out in Washington, D.C. Democratic Senator Patty Murray of Washington State and Republican GOP Senator Lamar Alexander of Tennessee have fashioned legislation and agreed upon legislation to override Trump's executive orders to destroy Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act. So their new legislation will reinstate payments to insurers to subsidize insurance for the working poor, people who don't qualify for Medicaid because they work just enough to be above the poverty level, but to subsidize costs for the working poor, and to encourage young and healthy people to buy insurance from the exchanges and thus have an insurance system that works, that includes healthy people as well as sick people, and includes all of us in America. Now, the legislation has a long way to go, but the fact that a Democrat and a Republican did it, and the fact that everybody on our side is greeting this new legislative push very positively, and means that it's likely to pass in the Senate. And if it passes in the Senate, it'll probably get, John, I don't know this, but it'll probably get Trump's support. After all, Trump did invite Democrats to help solve the health care crisis.
He sort of hinted at
and
that.
It'll likely...
He sort of hinted at that yesterday, I think, a little bit, but
yeah,
you never can tell.
And last week he made the call. Last week he made the call. I invite Democrats to join with us, blah, 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 be part of the... Yeah. So I think yesterday he sort of almost took credit for having encouraged
bipartisan. Of course, yeah. Right.
Yeah, the most wonderful, greatest man in the history of the world, Donald J. Rump.
Yeah, boy, I know.
But it is a, you know, it is a great step, and let's remember, ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, friends and neighbors, no victory that we announce on this program and we talk with you about on this program, no victory that you read in the newspaper or watch on Rachel Maddow or MSNBC or CNN, no victory comes without your action. No victory comes without this resistance. This resistance is the power behind saving Obamacare. This resistance is the power to influence the federal courts to once again knock down Trump's travel ban. So federal courts have now said that the latest iteration of his travel ban has been rejected, and that's now a three-time victory over what is arguably the central point of his candidacy and of his presidency, which is waging war against Muslim people and people from the Mideast, and trying to block the entry into this country of Muslim people based on their religion or based on their geography, and begin the process of inviting Muslim people to leave the country and begin the process of both official and unofficial action from the highest level to encourage Muslim people to leave their faith of Islam, which is a direct repudiation of the freedom of religion in America. What some people believe was the central fight in the war for independence for the American colonies, the fight for religious freedom. And now I'm riffing here, John. I'm off script.
Oh, that's okay. You're at 25 minutes. Okay. Just so you know, you told me to give you a marker.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, thank you. It is important for everybody who came to Capito's office to register their opposition to all of Trump and McConnell's efforts to destroy Obamacare and destroy the legacy of our first African-American president. That is a result of this resistance. The coming together of Lamar Alexander and Patty Murray is a result of this resistance. And I would argue that the steadfastness of the federal courts has been bolstered by the resistance. And in fact, you know, the standing up of democratic institutions against Trump's authoritarian and fascist desires and plans, and the standing up of our democratic institutions about that, is fueled by your resistance, is fueled by your actions, is fueled by your pressure on Senator Shelley Moore Capito, is fueled by everything we do in the name of democracy and freedom. And it is very significant, in my view, that the courts have ruled out of order Trump's third attempt to institute a travel ban on what I like to call, in quotes, the other. Because that's what Trump's all about. He's about building walls between each of us, turning us against one another, turning the working class against itself, turning all, trying to destroy all of our desires for democracy and all our impulses for freedom, just like we now see in Puerto Rico. It's now very clear that Puerto Rico has been euphemistically called a territory of the United States. It is very obvious now that Puerto Rico is a colony of the American Empire. It is treated like a colony. Its people are not treated as citizens of the United States, not accorded the same help and the same assistance and the same money as states of the Union like Texas and Florida, and the suffering of its people dismissed by the president of the United States, the pretend president, the pretender to the presidency of the United States. The New York Times reports that 80% of the electric grid in Puerto Rico, 80% is not working. So 80% of the people in Puerto Rico have no electricity in their homes.
Did I hear a story?
28%.
Go ahead. I hear a story that it's not going to be up until December, they were saying. I saw a story like that.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah. They're going to have to rebuild it. They're going to have to rebuild the electric grid. You know, we've got a lot of rebuilding of electricity grids across America, but none more serious and immediate than Puerto Rico. 28% of the people of Puerto Rico are without running water. Now, how do you survive with no running water in your house? I mean, that means trips to get bottled water. How do you take a bath? You can't take a shower. How do you stay hydrated in a tropical place? Puerto Rico is a tropical island. How do you stay hydrated when the temperature every day is about 85 degrees Fahrenheit?
Wow.
And no electricity and no water. 40% of the people in Puerto Rico are without cell phone signals. Half of all the sewage treatment plants in Puerto Rico are not working, and half of the homes without electricity. It's a tragedy. And yet, when Donald Trump addresses the crisis in Puerto Rico, he cannot help himself from blaming the Puerto Rican people for the debt in Puerto Rico, and he cannot help telling the people of Puerto Rico again and again that it's your fault, this crisis is your fault, your profligate spending and your lazy ways, which he implies are the reason for the crisis. And in fact, the reason for the crisis financially is the draining off of resources by American corporations operating in Puerto Rico, and as all colonies have happened to them, the extraction of resources and money from that particular crisis. It's a terrible situation. John, if we could, would you play the song Carry On by Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young? That sort of informs, I think, our work together. And when we come back from this song, I've got another poem, and then we'll talk about tax reform.
Okay, buddy, here it comes. Carry On.
Yeah.
Great song by a great band of wonderful musicians, poets, singers, songwriters, even prophets. If you're part of this resistance, or you want to be part of this resistance, I want you to imprint on your hearts and in your minds this lyric from this song. Rejoice, rejoice, you have no choice but to carry on. And that's where we find ourselves, those of us who love the traditions of America. Those of us who love the fact that America was the first attempt at a broad-based democracy in the history of humankind. Those of us who are committed to the beacon of light that shone from the war for independence and informed the struggle in France and informed the evolution of democracy in Great Britain, that informed the struggles for freedom across the world. You know, it's not too much to remember that as great a fans of Abraham Lincoln as John Case and Stuart Acuff are, neither one of us is more of a fan of Abraham Lincoln than was Ho Chi Minh of Vietnam. In fact, Ho Chi Minh took strength from the struggle of Abraham Lincoln to hold the Union together and to free a third of our population from chattel slavery and bondage. It's a great song by a great band. I've got happy news on the poetry front. The summer issue of my favorite poetry journal, actually literary journal, Blue Collar Review, the spring edition had three of my poems in it. And the summer edition, which came out a little late, has just come out in the last several weeks, has a poem of mine that begins with fascist march at UVA. They carry the torches of the KKK.
Oh goodness!
So I'm happy. Yet what, John?
You just shocked me there for a second there. Sorry.
Fascist march at UVA. They carry the torches of the KKK. So here's another poem about the actions of resistance that we all must bear in mind. I can no longer hear your heart. It is the sound of your feet moving to me that I need. We can only free ourselves in the struggle to free the other. When he degrades you, he degrades my sister. When he despises you, he despises all I've ever loved. When my heart is heavy, it is the weight of your burden. My joy comes through you. I've been so proud.
That's beautiful.
Thank you, John. Thank you very much. I really appreciate that. That means you're approval of my poetry is a very big deal for this.
Well, you're talking to only an ancient student of poetry. You know, I often read some of my efforts, you know, and to our good friend Janet Harrison, you know, former poetry.
Yeah. So,
you know, she would look at me in a kindly way at times. So, but I love poetry, and I think it's a wonderful form of expression and of all kinds. And I think the fact that you do it every day is, well, William Stafford, I think one of the great poets, you know, and they ask him, well, how many poems do you write? He says, I write one every morning, you know?
Yeah.
And and he said, only in the morning? Well, you know, if I miss it in the morning, I get to it in the afternoon, he says. And so, right. Really, where are they all? He says, well, Only some of them are worth showing to everybody. So, you know. And I, there's one of the, he won Pulitzer Prizes all over the place, you know. So anyway, there you go.
I visit my practice to try to write better poetry or quality poetry on my friends on Facebook every day.
Yeah, I mean, it's
and I find that, you know, as a as the recovering addict that I am, that making that effort early in the morning, starting the day with the effort to create something new and the effort to find the words to express the desires of my heart or the aching of my heart, every day liberates me for the rest of the day. For one thing, it frees my mind. And for another thing, I believe when I write that poem, whether it's good or not, when I, you know, it takes me at least an hour to get out a first draft. When I make that effort, I have made that day a good day, a positive day, a day of creation. And that means an awful lot, both to my recovery and my peace of mind, and to my desire to communicate these fundamental values and principles that we share, and to remind us of those values and principles, and to remind us that we are the patriots who love the dream of America that has yet to be fully realized, that you, that John and I will never see in our lifetimes, the full realization of the dream of America.
The more perfect union.
But the... No perfect, yeah. The
more perfect, union.
Yeah, the desire to form a more perfect union, absolutely. But that is what it means to be a patriot. That is what it means. I don't know how these fascists, and of course, John, you know this as well as I do from union organizing, 30% of any group of people like being enslaved. They like authoritarianism.
I know.
It's true. You know, Hitler was elected chancellor in 1932 or 1933 with just over 30% of the population of Germany. That's about where Trump's favorability ratings are. I think the latest poll showed him at 37%. During the fight over Obamacare, he dropped down to 32%. But that represents, that number represents the number of Americans who are in favor of authoritarianism. That was the, what Nixon called the silent majority. And so now I want to read another poem and then talk a little bit about tax reform, and then we're going to close out with one of America's greatest songs in history, What's Going On, Hymn to the Resistance, A Hymn to Freedom by Marvin Gaye. So let me read this poem, and then let's talk a little bit about tax reform, and then we'll cut you loose. Let me remind you, we'll be back again next Wednesday at 10 a.m. This poem is about what I believe animates the fascist movement in America. It's easy to understand your need to preserve privilege, your need to resist moving from majority to minority. Power is never proffered, after all. That's why you dehumanize the other. I will join with my sister to resist your sad need to reduce her role. But our understanding cannot be acquiescence. Resistance, not acquiescence, is all we offer.
Wow. I like that
one. You like that, John?
Yeah.
Thank you.
You know, you should have. It's too bad you didn't meet you know, my old mentor Don Tormey coming up, because he could turn a poem into a leaflet and a leaflet into a poem too. I mean, and I don't think he did it every day like you do it, but you know, so but that idea of that level of communication is just, it means something. I'm not quite sure what, but it does. And thank you for that.
You know, I think, thank you, John. I mean, your approval of my attempts at writing is very important. I have a tremendous respect for your love of poetry and writing and your love of literary creation and your understanding of it. I've learned a great deal from you about writing poetry. It's funny, I went to the writers group last week, I think it's a good thing to write angry poems about injustice. I think it's a good thing to write about this great social movement that is the resistance that we're going to look back on someday in America and say this was one of the great social movements in American history, the resistance to fascism in the form of Donald J. Trump. I think that's a good thing. It would be wonderful to look back in 10 years and think that I played a very small role, a tiny role in the creation of resistance art, in the creation of resistance literature. Because all great movements, as you know, John, are fed by art, and are fed, you know, the Wobblies fed.
Oh, yeah.
And the art of the Wobblies fed the struggle for worker liberation in America.
That's right.
And great art came out of the Wobblies. And, of course, you know, there was an entire book written by Peter Guralnick called Sweet Soul Music that talked about the influence of the Memphis-based Stax Studios on the Black liberation movement in America, the modern civil rights struggle in America. And of course, as we've listened to Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young this morning, the great influence of art and music and poetry on the movement to resist the war in Vietnam and to establish greater democracy.
Well, and the Woody Guthrie and the early anti-fascist songwriting and the Weavers and all that, the whole tradition. You know, I think it's great, Stuart, because I think it helps people approach it with a more positive attitude. As you, I don't know whether you noticed or not, but my friend, you know, our friend Mike Diesel and I have retreated to a more inhospitable way to make things happen later in the day better, and that is by having a slice of moose turd pie early in the morning. That nothing worse will happen the rest of the day. And I think your approach is better. I just want to say right now that that's a better approach than the somewhat defensive one. Yeah, right. I mean, we've been...
It's all art.
It's all
creation of the human spirit,
okay,
right?
Okay, we just... I mean, in the morning, Mike treats us to a visit from Dr. Lecter, you know, Hannibal Lecter, about something you could eat that would make sure that everything else would be uphill, you know, from there. So, anyway, I thank you for that.
Well, thank you, John. Thank you so much, and thank you so much for your friendship and leadership. Let me real quickly mention Donald J. Trump's attempts at tax reform and what the estimable Paul Krugman said about it. He wrote, I think yesterday, that 60% of Americans believe that the Republican plan favors the wealthy. And then Krugman, in his way, is aghast that 40% don't see that.
That's typical, Paul, yeah.
Yeah. There's this side, and then there's this side. You know, he writes that the main elements, and we should focus on the main elements, not the little sprinkled in of distraction, but the main elements are a cut in the top rates for individuals, cut in the top tax rates for individuals, and that favors the 1%. They're the only ones. The 1% are the only ones who will get that cut in their taxes. The cut in the radical cut in corporate taxes from 35% to 15%, which they think will spur, which they say will spur investment. I don't believe that. That's not true. Trickle down doesn't work. We now have 40 years of experimenting and being enslaved by trickle down. It hasn't worked. It's not going to work now. And finally, the Republican tax plan would end the estate tax. And of course, the Republicans will come out and say, they're ending the estate tax is justice for farmers because they'll be able to leave the family farm to their kids. Right. Well, hell, there is no estate tax for less than $11 million of inheritance.
Yeah.
I don't know any family farmers who intend to leave their kids more than $11 million in a farm.
Yeah.
So it's just a giveaway, again, to the 1%, and we're going to have to fight it tooth and nail because, and we'll talk about this next week, unless another crisis comes up that's bigger than this. We'll talk about this next week about how the tax plan and the cut in taxes informs the destruction of the emerging budget, the cuts in food stamps, the cuts in payments to the Affordable Care Act, the cuts in social programs across the board, while Donald Trump has this insane vision of raising the military budget by 10 times. What is that? 1,000% increase,
oh Lord,
in the military budget.
Well, that's that's a war. That's a big war.
Yeah. Well, there's two brewing. You know, one in the Middle East and one on the Korean Peninsula, which he seems intent on starting the one on the Korean Peninsula.
Is it only the general standing between us? His general, you know, the masters. Kelly and the other guy that are standing between us and these wars? I mean, you'd think he would have already started. God.
I think it is. I think, you know, it's scary to think that the military is playing a huge role in preserving democracy.
And peace.
And peace, right? Right.
I hope that's true.
Most of us assume the military would do just the opposite.
I know. I hope it's true, pal. I hope it's true. God.
It is true right now. Whether it's true ultimately, we'll see. But it is true right now. Thank you, friends and neighbors, ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters. Please be sure and join us again next Wednesday at 10 a.m. We're going to go out with this wonderful song by Marvin Gaye. I have to say that my dear brother and friend, Reverend James Orange, one of the closest advisors and aides to Dr. King, the warrior chief who organized the student strike in Birmingham that led to the fire hosing and the police dog attacks on the children of Birmingham, that galvanized a radical reaction to segregation and violence against, historic violence against African American people. James Orange used to quote this song every time he gave a speech. It's by the wonderful soul man, Marvin Gaye. What's going on, baby? What's going on? I'll see you next Wednesday. Thanks for tuning in. God love you. God bless you. And God love and bless the USA.
All right, buddy.
Right, John. Thank you, brother. Appreciate you. Love you.
All right. Love
all
you, too.
Love all out there.
Bye-bye, pal.
See you soon.
Yeah.
There's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some
father. We don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate. You know we've got to find a way to bring some love and get here today. Picket lines and picket signs. Don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see.
Right on.
Yeah.